Great. All right. Awesome. Well, anyway, hi. How are you today, David?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
All right. What are you up to today?
Just got a normal day at work. Try and squeeze in a little drawing comics in between. Go home and put my kids to bed and hang out with my wife a little bit.
Cool.
Yeah, about it.
And I guess I have some questions for you.
Yeah.
So you're working on My Brain is Hanging Upside Down, is that what it's called? Or it's what I saw on your blog?
Yeah, My Brain is Hanging Upside Down. It's a book that'll come out next fall from St. Martin's Press.
Great. How long is the book going to be, do you think?
Yeah, like 112 pages, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty much, I have a comic book called Deadpan, and it's pretty much all of Deadpan 2, plus another 80 pages or so.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, I actually have the two issues of Deadpan. I'm just curious how it's going to be different, since I guess the first Deadpan was all your dream comics,
mm-hmm.
and the second one was like the sex history comic and dream comics and more personal stuff. How's this one going to be different?
Yeah, the book is basically an expansion on that second issue. It doesn't have anything from the first. It's more dreams. It's more portrait comics, including one about my mom,
mm-hmm.
And comic strip about both of my kids being born. And then there's the diary strips. There's the sex history. There's a strip called Black History, and there's a strip called Work History. That's pretty much it. It's just kind of the same format and the same three different styles and the same conceptual frameworks for drawing strips, but it just expanded quite a bit.
Great. And who put out Deadpan? Is that all self-published? Or
yeah, Deadpan 1 was self-published by being put on a credit card, which I would not recommend to anyone because I'm still paying it off.
Uh-huh.
Number 2, I got the Zarek grant for, and Fantagraphics distributed that one, and then they also picked up number 1, so they're doing all the, getting it into comic stores now, which I don't miss at all. Yeah.
And how did you end up getting the Zarek grant? We've actually had some Zarek award winners on our show. I'm just
mm-hmm.
wondering how you got that and what you got it for and all sorts of stuff.
Sure, yeah. I applied for it probably 5 times all the way back, 97 up through, I guess, 2002. So I kept plugging at it, and I can really see the stuff I was submitting beforehand was just very unprofessional and amateur-looking.
Mm.
It's totally obvious now, but at the time I just thought, what are they, crazy? You know, it's like the best I could possibly do. Like, what are they thinking? And having grudges against the people who did win. And then, you know, it's just about working harder and trying to step it up to the next level. And I did Deadpan 1 on my own, like I said, and you know, I was almost overqualified to apply for the grant, but I saw that Brian Ralph did for that book of his.
Uh-huh.
I just thought, well, it's fair game, you know, it is money out there for comic book artists, and at the time I wasn't being published by Fantagraphics. So yeah, I mean, it's just, I was definitely at the level where I could win it, and I felt really confident about it, and also just everything I designed to go with the grant application just had a professionalism that I didn't have before. You know, everything had like letterhead, and it's just about putting on selling yourself and doing the marketing end of it. It's like,
uh-huh.
that's what made me win it, I'm sure. And the comic book was just really solid at that point. So,
okay. And
yeah.
how did you end up getting started in comics? Like, did you put out minis and stuff like that? So you're a visual arts person, right? You went to school for all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm self-taught as a cartoonist, which
mm-hmm.
I think all the best cartoonists are. You know, you learn by just reading comics and copying panels, and you get your own. You know, it's like any self-taught artist has this really unique, visionary kind of way of drawing and seeing things, and
right.
I think it comes from this self-taught and outsider kind of vision. So that's what I'm most interested in, and that's true of my own work too. But you know, I studied some painting and drawing, and I mostly studied experimental film San Francisco.
Right.
And that was really, really helpful in kind of breaking down Hollywood and TV language that just creeps into everything people do when they make comics. So I was watching stuff that just had a very different sensibility and point of view, and was organized conceptually. So, you know, these diary films or these
uh-huh.
one-person travel films or whatever I was studying, it just had this kind of singular vision and singular purpose. So that definitely influenced me a lot.
I've thought that like the art program here, they don't require the students to take experimental film, but I'm a film major, so I'm in that class, and it's like, it feels like an art history class, and it's, I completely understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Who are some of your big influences from experimental that you can recall offhand?
Yeah, I mean, Stan Brakhage is probably like the biggest name, and definitely he's an influence, especially his small gauge 8mm song films. Those just blew my mind. They're so fragile and so personal. There's a guy named Scott Stark in San Francisco who is just one of the best filmmakers ever, and he's very...
Is that the one you... I remember you referenced something called Sodom or something in one of your books?
That's a guy named Luther Price. Okay. He's really great. He's great, too. He did a film called Sodom, which is all kind of re-edited 8mm pornography and set with this Gregorian chant and playing backwards. It's a very disturbing, great film. But Scott Stark, he was the first filmmaker who was kind of... he's definitely radically personal and doing, you know, he's in this tradition of personal experimental filmmaking, but he had like an entertainment value to what he was doing too. So like he did this one film called I'll Walk With God, which was just shots of a flight attendant instruction card from an airline, and it was just shot in this way to look like a religious ritual. And he played this really amazing over-the-top like Italian opera behind it. It just pushes the film into this like almost heavenly place, but it's funny too. And so he's definitely a big influence. And a guy named Lewis Klar, who did this series of films called Picture Books for Adults, and a similar aesthetic to Scott Stark, where he's like recutting old Marvel animated cartoons with like Frank Sinatra songs, with having the character, the evil guy and the good guy sing love songs to each other, and just really beautiful stuff.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah. So those are a few. There's a lot of women filmmakers too, Marjorie Keller, and this guy named Joe Gibbons is really great. A lot of these kind of diary filmmakers really inspired me.
You can definitely tell, I mean, especially from your work being so, it's almost daringly personal. Like, it goes, like, past any level of any sort of other diary comic I've ever seen, and there's a sort of beauty and, like, groundbreakingness to it, I guess.
Oh, thanks.
And, I don't know, how do you feel, like, putting such personal work out there into the world for just people to read? Like, anyone can go into a comic shop and read your entire sex history. What's that feel like?
Yeah. You know, I said this recently on a panel, like, I really resonate with this quote from Robert Crumb when he talked about people rifling through his sketchbooks, and he just said, you know, my life is an open book, and I really relate to that. I couldn't care less who reads it. I don't feel that attached to it. You know, it's my story,
right.
But, you know, it's not really who I am in some ways. It's just things that happen to me or things I experience. So if it's entertaining and if it's got some... a lot of times you're in this dialogue with other autobiographical cartoonists, and so there's like this I don't know, almost upping the ante. Or it's not quite like that. It's not competitive, but you're just kind of saying the more personal, the better, or the more humiliating, the better sometimes. And so I'm just, anytime I find these little nuggets of my history, I think, well, I have to put that in because, you know, it makes me embarrassed because it has this emotional content to it. I can't shy away from that once I start. So,
and I think that really helps because I think a lot more people can identify with something like that, knowing that someone has put themselves out there like that. I know there's certain scenes in there that I'm like, oh my God, I've never seen this before. But yeah, that happens, but I've never been, you've put words to it. But yeah, I guess I want to ask about your dreams, which are so weird. I'm just wondering how you record these and what... what inspires your dreams and how you record them, and
sure,
what's your method?
Yeah, you know, I think the dream comics started definitely reading other cartoonists who have done dream comics, like Julie Doucet has done some incredible ones, but also reading some bad ones and thinking, you know, these aren't really worth reading. And there's like a lot of dream comics that are just kind of like, look at this crazy plot line that I made up in my sleep, and it just doesn't mean anything. And as I was getting serious about comics, I realized that the best comics are really, really have good writing. You know, the writing is the architecture behind the comics for you to hang pictures on. And so I was looking at my own writing, and I'm not really a short story writer or a poet, but I did have these journals and journals filled with dreams and different experiences and memories. So I started looking at the dreams as, already written and recorded. Whenever I have a really intense one, I just write it in my journal, and I've been doing that for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years.
And is this something you do, like, right after you have it? Like, you wake up and you're like, I have to write down this dream?
Yeah, the next day, definitely. Sometimes, if it's, like, 5 in the morning and it's really potent, I'll get up and write it down, but usually just the next morning. Okay. Part of it was just that. It's like, it's already written, I just needed to turn it into pictures now. But the other thing is, you know, I guess if I've had any contribution to, making these dream comics, which, like I said, a lot of people have done, it's that I'm more interested in sort of the emotional experience of the places we go in our sleep, and instead of just, like I said, the plot line or the weirdness mm-hmm. factor. I'm interested in, like, you know, what it feels like to be there, and that's what I'm trying to capture, is like that sensation of being in these strange rooms and these strange people who are a combination of people we know in our waking life, you know, that kind of sense.
Did you really have a dream about Stephen Merritt?
Yeah, I did. Sure.
Oh, man, that's what convinced me to buy the book. I was looking through it, and I saw the Stephen Merritt one. I was like, oh, my God, I have to buy this. This is great.
That's great. I actually have a story about that, too. I hadn't met him at the time that I did that. I was just a fan, but I did know Claudia, who's also in Magnetic Fields.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I saw her at this party, and she said, she told me, and Stephen was coming to the party later, and she said, this is the strangest thing, but just this morning, he was in his apartment, and a friend was over and had left my comic book there, and so he woke up, this is Stephen Merritt, he woke up and went to the bathroom, and there was my comic book laying in the bath. So he just started reading it, and then all of a sudden there's this comic strip about him.
Oh my God.
And he just was like, what the f*** is this? So he called Claudia, he's like, what is this thing? And, you know, they talked about it, and so I met him a couple hours, pretty much several hours after he had just read this thing that I had done about him, and it was a very funny, awkward meeting. It was very sweet, actually. He's really into my work and was complimentary, but I could tell it was like meeting someone you know has a crush on you or something. He was really embarrassed and didn't want to talk about it at all. You know?
Did you flirt with him or anything, or was there any flirting going on?
Cause, no, not really. I'm not really into guys, but
I'm not either. I'd flirt with Stephen Merritt, though.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I mean, I think he's a genius, and it was that kind of excitement to meet him and stuff. But it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't really a flirty thing.
No, I understand. I guess I had another question about your work in anthologies, which is a lot of where I saw your work mm-hmm. before I'd actually got your work. Like, I read the Sex History comic, mm-hmm. and what book was that in? It was
Kramer's Ergot. Yeah,
yeah, I read that, and also in the MoMA anthologies, and McSweeney's. McSweeney's is the one I was most curious about. How did you get all that work, since your comics sort of bookend the book, and had that work out for you?
Yeah, McSweeney's. I was living in Chicago for 2 years, and I was sending my stuff to Chris Ware, and he was very, very gracious. I mean, he responded right away and said he really loved my work and invited me out to dinner with him and Ivan Brunetti this one night. And so it just blew my mind as a young cartoonist. And so ever since then, he's just been really supportive. Like, he's opened up opportunities mm-hmm. in Chicago. There was a free weekly newspaper that he got me into, and I wound up doing the cover. And then, you know, he was just very encouraging. And so when he put together McSweeney's, he just chose the people he wanted to be in it, and I was, of course, really, really flattered that he asked me to be in it, and totally blown away that he used me to close the book out. He just said, you know, the way he was thinking of it was, he put me next to Adrian Tomina and said, this is what you can, if you work really hard and you're young, you know, this is what you can achieve, or something like that, which is a huge compliment. So, yeah, I was thrilled to be in it. It definitely brought more people to my work than anything else at the time. So,
that's really incredible.
Yeah.
Let's see. What other? You have more work coming out and more anthologies coming soon, right? What else do you have coming up?
Yeah, I'm in MoM and I'm doing a strip called Overpeck in that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I read the first two volumes, and that's continued from the dream at the end of Deadpan 1, right?
Yeah, basically it's all the characters from the dreams in Deadpan 1, but set in a fictional town and just kind of interacting. It's sort of like my Peanuts strip where all these characters are parts of my psyche and they're just kind of bouncing up against each other. And because it's fiction, I can do more magical realist stuff, which is interesting. And so that'll be its own book when it's done.
Awesome.
Fantagraphics will put that out around the same time next year. And yeah, that'll wrap up in a few issues, and I'm excited. I'll be on the cover of that issue, and they'll do an interview with me for that issue of Moam. That'll be, I think, like next spring. But I'm also in, there's a book, Best American Comics, right now.
Yeah, I saw the cover on your blog.
Yeah, so I'm in that book. They're just reprinting the Portrait of My Dad strip. And that was, I just actually did a few events in New York for that, which was fun. I got to meet Harvey Pekar and do a panel with him, and that was good. And then there's a book Ivan Brunetti put together called Anthology of Graphic Fiction, which is a really amazing book, like a really perfect follow-up to McSweeney's as kind of a canon. And I think it's mostly going to be used to sort of teach comics in college classes and stuff. And
great. Yeah, it's really exciting. I don't know, we finally have a comics class here at University of Kansas, like the first year we've had it. And I think it's really exciting for what's happening with comics. And someone had one of the Moam anthologies, and they were passing it around, and I was showing my teacher your stuff, or no, she'd seen it, and she's like, "It's so weird." it's really funny.
Yeah, it seems like the younger crowd really gets my stuff, and you know, older readers don't always know what to make of it. People like my in-laws, I kind of keep them away from it, you know.
No, I definitely feel that. Well, I guess another question I have is sort of a standard one we have here on the show is, how'd you end up getting into comics? Did you read as a kid, and what was it that you read that said, I could do this?
Yeah, I did read as a kid. I was doing, like, newspaper strip-style stuff back when I was, I don't know, 5 or 6, and drawing, like, my own children's books and things like that. But it wasn't until I read, like, Spider-Man, you know, when I was an early preteen that my mind was blown. I really like fell in love with the language of comics, and looking back on that stuff now, it's just god awful crap. I mean, it was the worst 80s Marvel comic books. I don't know what in there fired my imagination, but it did, and I'm glad it did. And you know, I kind of like shed that stuff and then gravitated to like also third rate bad Mad magazine in the 80s, and I liked Gru, you know, that Sergio Aragonés comic book. That was interesting. And then by high school, I just was embarrassed by all of it and, you know, put it all aside. And it wasn't until college that I discovered Dan Clowes and Chris Ware. And they're the ones who just really got me back in full force. I've had to, like, appreciate Crumb and Hernandez Brothers, like, sort of backwards through the two of them. I really fell in love with their stuff first. I just found it much more sophisticated and subtle and interesting and literary. And I've had to kind of like, you know, work at appreciating some of their influences.
No, I think that's definitely what's happening, especially with this younger generation. I mean, we've been getting stuff like Dan Clowes and Chris Ware and going back and finding all the other really great stuff that was there the whole time.
Yeah, but the thing that's nice about Clowes and Whereas, like, they don't really apologize for being cartoonists. And even with Crumb, I love his stuff, but he's coming out of this kind of satire Mad Magazine tradition, and more than half of his work is really that kind of formula where it's like the superego sweeps in at the end and, you know, tidies up the strip. And it's kind of irritating in some ways. Even though it's brilliant, a lot of it, it's like it still has that comic booky, like, formula that no one really needs to use anymore, you know. It's like the whole... It's wide open now. You can really do anything you want. So,
great. I guess another question about your process. How do you ink your work? It looks sort of like markers, but like watercolor at the same time.
Yeah. I just use an ink and brush, and sometimes I paint. I paint it too. Mm-hmm. But lately, I've been doing a lot of ink and brush, and then just coloring it in Photoshop on the computer. Like all the Overpeck stuff is colored that way, and but yeah, now everything you see in the strip is like hand drawn. My process is changing. It used to be like much more the standard cartoonist thing where you like do lots of thumbnails and then you pencil it and you get it really tight and then you ink it. And I just found like that was really making my work look really leaden and kind of stiff. And so I've gone to this approach that Ivan Brunetti does, which is you just do a really quick doodle thumbnail, and then I kind of blow that up on a giant copier and I ink over that on a light box. So I still have like the freshness of the doodle, which I think is sort of the atom of the whole cartooning language. It's like it has to be quick and fast and dirty, and then I just kind of pretty it up a little bit with the inking. But I try and maintain that that real roughness. And then the diary strips are just drawn with a rapidograph pen over really light gestural pencil lines, just to kind of keep that. You know, the way Charles Schulz drew Peanuts was he never penciled their faces or their bodies. He just kind of drew their height and a little circle for their head, and each time he drew Charlie Brown's face, it was like an original drawing. It was just, he just had it, you know, it's like body memory in his hand. He just knew how to do that, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do too, is just get that drawing memory going in my hand, you know.
No, it's definitely something that I think makes the work a lot better. I don't know, it's really striking and different than anything else going on right now, I think.
Thanks.
But let's see. Oh, I wanted to talk about your music and your CD that you have available. I heard a song about Photoshop, I think, on your website.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering what sort of musical influences you have and if you're still recording, since I guess the last CD you had was like recorded in 94 or something?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I used to be primarily a musician. In high school, I was in a band called Velvet Cactus Society, and we were on this label called Shimmy Disc, and we recorded two albums. And you know, it's very quirky. I guess it's called, you know, the what's the name of the movement, that anti-folk music. You know, like King Missile and there's this guy named Dog Bowl, who's probably like my biggest musical influence that no one's ever heard of. He's on Shimmy Disc too, but I quickly gravitated away from that band and like just did. I probably recorded like 100 solo 4-track songs of just quirky little love songs, and I'm really into melody and pop, and but I just do it in my own kind of, you know, low-tech style. I haven't recorded in a long time, and that Photoshop song is something I did just a couple of years ago with my friend, who's a brilliant musician, this guy Jeremy Broomfield, who I highly recommend people seeking out his blog and his music. He's just amazing. So he and I are, we keep talking about starting a band called Heat Broom, and that's one of the, that's like our first song. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I only have a couple more questions
here. Yeah, sure.
I wanted to know if you'd seen The Science of Sleep yet, because I just saw that the other day, and just the way it deals with dream and stuff. And
oh, it utterly blew my mind. I totally love that movie.
No, that's the same thing that happened. I kind of walked out of the theater, and I was with my person I went with, and I just couldn't say anything. I was just speechless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it was exactly, if I ever make movies again, like, that's exactly the kind of movie I want to make, something very dream-laden and beautiful and handmade. Everything about it, I loved it. I just loved everything about it. Yeah.
And I think that's all I have on my list. Is there anything else you want to talk about that you have coming up, or anything you're working on right now you want people to know about?
No, I think that's it. I mean, the only thing I didn't really mention is, I sometimes make these little sculptures based on my comics too, and I'm working on a series of these little dioramas of the dream strips, and I hope to someday have like a gallery show of the comics originals and then with these little dioramas alongside them. So hopefully that'll be something I do next year around the time my books come out.
Great.
Yeah.
And I guess one more question. What's the weather like in New York today?
It got cold again. Yesterday was gorgeous, and it was like 60-something and like almost t-shirt weather, and today it's quite chilly.
Okay.
But I love it. I love the fall. I love it when it gets cold and you have to stay inside and draw comics.
Sounds good. I think I'm going to do that today, actually. No, it's very cold here, too. So, well, yeah, that's all I got. David, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, man. Wonderful, great questions.
Wonderful having you.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
All right. Have
Thanks
a nice
a
day.
Yep, you too.
Bye.
Bye.